Welcome to the Silver Screen Podcast. I'm Jared Boomer.
And I'm Katie Gainey West. This is a podcast about movies and pop culture.
And today we are reviewing Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. Of course, a sequel to Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. And we have a special guest with us today. Brandon Shockney is on the show. Brandon, how are you?
Hi, everyone. I am good. Thank you so much for having me.
Good,
so
good.
Exciting.
So Brandon, on a scale of like 1 to 10, how big of a Spider-Man fan are you?
Oh, wow. Is 10 10's the highest you will allow me to go?
Higher. We expect you to go higher.
No, I'm a big fan. I mean, my dog is named Parker after Peter Parker. You know, I've dressed as Spider-Man for Halloween at multiple ages. I've taken in so much Spider-Man content over the years. He's definitely my favorite superhero. Mm-hmm. So, you know, anything involving him is usually high on my radar. So I was very excited, obviously, about this movie. Into the Spider-Verse was one of my favorites. So I'm very excited to talk about the sequel.
Nice.
He's already seen it twice, too.
I saw it twice. I saw it again last night just for this podcast. I was like, I want it to be fresh and raw. So I'm gonna like, you know, have it all in the brain, and it's here. I'm ready.
So we will talk Spider-Man in just a few minutes, but first we got our normal items. We don't have any news items today, so we're just gonna roll past that. There's not much going on in Hollywood. Obviously with the writer's strike still going on, there's not like a lot of new stuff getting announced currently, because the writers are still on strike, so we haven't had a lot of new announcements for things. And then we don't have any corrections either, so we'll just move into recommendations. And
Jared,
Katie, I guess we'll have you go first. Yes, what do you have?
Speaking
news,
speaking of the writer strike, I looked up today out of curiosity how long the one lasted in 2007 2008. It was 100 days. So we're only about 30 days in.
And I think we're really going to start seeing it. You know, for a while, you don't see it affecting anything, right? But I think now we're getting to that point where it's like stuff's getting delayed. Stuff's going to,
I do, because I watch Colbert and Seth Meyers every night, and now I can't. It's killing me.
And we're getting close to the point where, like, fall TV shows that come on every year in the like network TV shows that come on in the fall, like, if they don't get it resolved within probably the next month or so, I mean, like, those are going to have to get postponed and pushed back, because they'll start production on those fall shows pretty soon here. So for like the new seasons. So so
just brace yourself for lots of game shows and reality shows and stuff.
Oh, I love reality.
Well, there you go.
You know me. You guys know.
Katie's big Love is Blind fan. And
last night I was like, I had a couple like presents and stuff to wrap for like Father's Day and baby showers and things, and I was like, I don't have anything to watch right now. And I looked at Bravo. There were new episodes of Real Housewives of Atlanta, and I watched 3 hours.
I mean, thank goodness,
and they were so good. Those ladies, they know how to entertain. Okay, all right,
very nice. So, no, we
anyway,
don't, I'm not a big Real Housewives watcher.
That's okay. At least I have Allison on my side.
You do,
Jared. Do you have recommendations? Do you want me to go first?
I can go first real quick. I had two recommendations. One is a documentary that I watched. It's on Amazon Prime, and it's called Shiny Happy People, about the Duggar family.
You watched that?
I did. Now, the Duggars have 19 children, of course. It was very interesting. The Duggars are part of like a religious cult, and the documentary is a lot about that cult and what they believe and how that influenced the Duggars. And then they have other people, though, that were in that religion too, like on the documentary. And they also have Jill Duggar on the documentary, one of the Duggar children. So I think that added a lot of legitimacy to it by having a member of the Duggar family on the documentary. So that was very interesting. It's four parts, but each part's only like 45 minutes, so it doesn't take very long to watch. And that's, again, on Amazon Prime. It's called Shiny Happy People, Duggar Family Secrets. So I thought that was really interesting. And then I've also been watching, just kind of like on in the background when I'm doing other stuff, is Smartless on the Road on Max now, not HBO Max, but Max. Obviously, the Smart List podcast, Sean Hayes, Will Arnett, Jason Bateman, they do their podcast. They have a guest on. One person knows who the guest is. The other two don't. I feel like this is probably the next progression of our podcast, Katie, is that they went on a tour and then they had a documentary team kind of film them while on tour. So I'm just waiting for somebody to contact us about doing that. I'm assuming it'll happen soon.
I'll turn in my notice at work tomorrow.
But it's six episodes. I've watched the first three, and it's basically just behind the scenes footage of them on tour, but obviously they're three comedians and very funny, so it's not like a serious watch. You're not gonna like, you don't have to really pay attention a ton at all, but if you just want something to watch while like you're folding laundry or eating dinner or whatever, it's a good thing to turn on. So those are my two recommends.
Those are great. I love those guys together too, and I've listened to the podcast, but I haven't watched the show. I just knew that was wildly popular right now. Also, fun fact, I've met the Duggar family.
Have
years
you?
Ago. It was a very bizarre situation. My cousin really liked the show and was living in Kentucky at the time. And I went to go visit her for a weekend, and she was like, hey, they're doing a book signing at this like, Barnes & Noble. And we went, and I met all of them except, I think Josh wasn't there, thank God, and one of the daughters wasn't there. But everybody else I met.
Wow.
They were nice, but I also was like, weird. I felt weird meeting them. Like, I don't know that was a life goal of mine. But I have met them and I have a picture with them too. So,
Okay.
Anyway, very obviously they had quite
Bob
the fall
Duggar, not a great guy. The documentary kind of goes to show that. So yeah,
I'm like scared to watch it, but I think I have to now.
Yeah. I think you need to check it out. So.
Well, I had a really different week of shows. I finished Succession and Ted Lasso. I'm devastated. I feel empty inside. I don't know what to do. Well, really, now I'm just moving back on to like Vanderpump Rules and reality TV. But I was pleased with the outcome of Succession. There were a couple things that I would have liked more resolution, but I do think they wrapped it up really nicely. It certainly wasn't one of those shows where I'm going to talk about for years how I hated the ending. I thought they did a good job. And then Ted Lasso, I won't ruin any of that, but I was super pleased with the end of Ted Lasso. And I really don't know if I can say the end of Ted Lasso because they're already talking spinoffs. Nobody has said it's a series finale, so it's probably going to keep going. But really liked how they wrapped up the storylines and the section with Jason Sudeikis because he might not come back. And then I read Just Mercy, A Story of Justice and Redemption. That was by Bryan Stevenson. And they made a movie. Did we? I can't remember if we covered it, but I know we've talked about it on the podcast.
I think we did do an episode
Michael B.
on
Jordan.
It.
Okay. Ugh, Michael B. We already know how I feel. Love him. But the book was fantastic. I think it's going to be a top read for me this year. If you are concerned about the criminal justice system, it's not going to make you feel any better. If you have no understanding of capital punishment or how we treat people in prisons or reentry once they're getting out of prison, it's an excellent read. And I'll just say, like, it's eye-opening and another thing that makes me extremely embarrassed about America. But Bryan Stevenson and the Equal Justice Initiative in Alabama are doing excellent work. And by the end of the book, he had freed over 100 people who were falsely convicted and on death row. So that's incredible.
Yeah.
But to think there's at least 100, which there's hundreds that are falsely imprisoned on death row and sentenced to die. But anyway, incredible book. I highly recommend it. Again, it's Just Mercy by Bryan Stevenson, Bryan with the Y. And if you're interested, we did do Just Mercy on episode 58. So it was a little while back during COVID, back in the day. But if you're interested. And Brandon, I think you had some recommendations, and I was very eager to hear about these.
Yes, I just brought one, and I figured since we are talking about a comic book movie, I would bring a comic book suggestion.
Oh, how clever.
Very smart.
Yeah. But I will say it's not a superhero comic book, so there you go. Although there are superheroes in it.
Wow.
Try to, you know. Okay. Figure that one out. But it's called, it just came out this past year, just wrapped up. It was only 8 issues. It's called 8 Billion Genies. Okay. It was written by Charles Soule with art by Ryan Brown. And really quick, high level pitch of the comic book. It's what if all of a sudden every person in the world got their own genie that would grant them one wish? What would happen? Ooh. So it's interesting. The first issue is the first 8 seconds. The second issue is the first 8 minutes, and so on and so on each issue. And you see what happens with the consequences of everyone. I mean, of any age, children, you know, to people, you know, quite old, getting that one wish. What would they do with it? So
that's
it's
a cool concept.
It's really good.
Yeah.
And there's a trade paperback collecting all 8 issues coming out on July 25th. So if you don't want to like go to a comic shop and try to hunt down the individual issues, there's going to be a nice collected edition next month.
Yeah. What is a trade paperback? That just means like a paperback.
Paperback is just a collection of individual issues.
Okay.
So since this is like a mini series that was only 8, it's a like a thick book that has all the issues in it.
Wow.
Yeah. Cool.
That sounds very cool.
Yeah.
That was a great suggestion.
Thank you.
Very nice.
You also finished Succession and Ted Lasso.
I did. Okay. It's crazy how everything's ending. Not only that, I finished Barry, Succession, Ted Lasso. This seems like a year where a lot of shows that have been in the cultural zeitgeist these past few years are like, you know, coming to an end. So I'm curious what's going to kind of rise up to replace a lot of these that have felt like such big talk pieces, you know, within the last few years.
Jared really
I mentioned the same thing like a couple episodes ago. It seems like there's just all these big shows were ending, so like all I have left now is like The Bear, Only Murders in the Building, and then Abbott Elementary are like the three that I can think of off the top of my head that I like watch you know, every single episode of. So but like the show's just got cut in half pretty much. So I'm going to have to find some new shows to watch.
Between that and the writer's strike.
I know.
It's going to be an interesting landscape.
Guys, you're forgetting, and just like that, the spinoff / continuation of Sex and the City.
I'm not forgetting it.
Which is coming back June 22nd. And Aidan Shaw is back.
Did you? I did read that Samantha is going to make a cameo.
Here's what's
going
to happen. Because everyone's talking about Kim Cattrall coming back. All that she agreed to film was a phone conversation. The only person that knew she was coming back was Patricia Field, who's always done the costumes. Mm-hmm. Also does the costumes for Emily in Paris, by the way. And she knew because she had to make sure she had like an outfit. So they like film her doing the phone conversation. And I think they just added Sarah Jessica Parker later. But it's Sarah Jessica Parker talking to her on the phone, but they're in different locations. That's all we're
going to
get.
There is no way that is going to be satisfying in the least.
I'm not satisfied. But I'm so tired of like the beef and not knowing the truth.
Right.
I just want the show, and I like the changes they've made for it, and just like that. And I like the new characters, and I'm just honestly happy Sex and the City isn't done. So
hopefully Sarah Jessica Parker and Kim Cattrall can get to the point that Vin Diesel and Dwayne The Rock Johnson have gotten to. You know, hopefully
they
can reconcile. Yeah.
Did they really?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Guys, I
don't
know
like
these
each
things.
Other.
No.
But. Well, I don't want to spoil.
Like in one of the Fast and Furious movies, you can watch where they have scenes together.
Yeah.
It's clearly it was like, we filmed Vin, he left, Dwayne came in, we filmed Dwayne.
I feel really bad. I think Arjun told me that this fight happened.
Wow.
They just had a big disagreement. Also, Vin Diesel kind of thinks he's like the Shakespeare of the Fast and Furious universe.
Yeah.
And I feel like that turns a lot of people off. Like I think that's why the director of this most recent one kind of bailed out. It's because he was like, Vin Diesel was basically just trying to take over and direct this thing, even though I was technically the director. So
Jared, also, I think you're going to like this. I still, every once in a while, I just ask Arjun, like, hey, are you joking with me? Like, do you really like Fast and the Furious? Or like, is this a real thing? And he just kind of smiles and laughs and never answers.
That's like the best response.
Or he says something about family. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
It's all about family.
So who knows?
I knew this new one was going to be not great when the cookout was at the beginning of the movie instead of the end.
Right.
I was like, what are we doing? That's always
the
end.
And we never see Rita Moreno again.
Nope. Just that one scene.
The first
just
of
like
four
Kim
Cattrall
and SJP are going to do for the Sex and the City show. So, yeah. I'm sure that'll be good.
Look forward to that, you guys. If you're looking forward to new shows, you've got several seasons now. You can catch up on the first season of And Just Like That.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Yeah.
And that was an ad for And Just Like That on
Thank
Max.
You.
So, Okay, let's get into Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, released on June 2nd of 2023, rated PG for some language, animated action violence, and thematic elements. It's 2 hours and 20 minutes, and on IMDb, it's a 9.1 out of 10, very highly rated. It's rare for stuff to get over a 9 on IMDb, so that is very high. Rotten Tomatoes, critics 95%, audience 96%. Lots of people loving this movie for sure, and it's done very well at the box office so far. And its first week of release, $133 million domestically, and then $221 million when you factor in the worldwide total, which is much better than the first movie did opening weekend.
Like five times to the opening of the first one,
Brandon's actually getting paid by Sony?
Sony?
Sony? Yeah. Question mark? Sony?
They got the money. Send it to me.
They do.
No, you're already working for them. We already know. You can just be open about it here.
So the synopsis for this one is Miles Morales catapults across the multiverse, where he encounters a team of spider people charged with protecting its very existence. When the heroes clash on how to handle a new threat, Miles must redefine what it means to be a hero. And Brandon, you found some info about the origin of Miles Morales. Obviously, if people have only seen the Spider-Man movies, they've only seen Miles Morales in two films at this point, but he's been a part of the comic books for quite a while.
Yeah, but not too long, which I think is kind of fascinating, right? So to kind of give a quick background on how this came to be with Miles Morales, is in around the year 2000, there was this thing called the Ultimate Universe that Marvel launched. So, you know, Marvel comics have been going since the 60s, and they had this whole all these stories over the years that they didn't want to like really mess with, but they still wanted to have an initiative that would bring in new readers and have like more modern takes on these iconic characters. So they did this Ultimate Universe, which was like a side comic line that came out where they could kind of like take some chances with the characters and things they wouldn't normally do or touch in the main universe. And that Ultimate Universe did have a Peter Parker for a while, for about 10 years. But then Marvel announced, hey, we're doing this thing. We're going to end the Peter Parker storyline. He's going to die in the comics. And it was like a big deal. And they were like, we're going to be introducing a new Spider-Man, someone that's not Peter Parker. And that's where we got Miles Morales. So around, it was September of 2011, which was interesting because I had gone to, I had moved to Chicago in July 2011 and just kind of was getting back. There was like a comic shop really close to my apartment in Chicago. And I was like, oh man, I want to like get back into comics. And I remember this coming out, it being a big deal. So I actually have. I actually have this issue, Ultimate Comics Spider-Man number one, which is the first appearance of Miles Morales as Spider-Man, written by Brian Michael Bendis and drawn by Sarah Pacelli, who's one of my favorite artists. She's amazing. But I really just wanted to highlight this because Miles Morales has only been a character since 2011, right? And then that first movie came out in 2018. Mm-hmm. So he became so popular and widespread in the comic like community that he started to bleed into comic books and novels and video games and TV shows. And finally, like, it was a big deal that we were getting this whole movie based around a Spider-Man that wasn't Peter Parker, which was what everyone knew. And it's cool because we now have a generation of people that are growing up where their main Spider-Man that they know is this biracial teenager who's African-American and Puerto Rican. And then, you know, that it's just great to see that. He got so popular, he moved from the Ultimate Universe they brought him into the main Marvel comics where he now resides. So he's, and not only that, but the Gwen Stacy character is even a newer addition to the comic universe. So it's crazy that now we're getting like all these spider people that are fairly new in the comics, like Spider-Punk is only like a few years old in the comics. And now we get him in this big bombastic movie. And I think that's really neat that we're starting to see more and more diversity within our comics on things like the big screen.
That's so cool. Yeah. See, this is why we needed you.
I wouldn't have looked
any of this up and I had no idea.
Yeah.
That's super cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very neat. So, This one is directed by three different people, Joaquin Dos Santos, Kemp Powers, and Justin K. Thompson. They've all done numerous projects that you've probably heard of. So Dos Santos is known for The Legend of Korra, Avatar, The Last Airbender, and Voltron Legendary Defenders. And then Kemp Powers.
All great shows. Co-directed... Sorry. All great shows.
Brandon loves them all. I haven't seen a single one. Yeah. Actually, though, Amanda, my sister-in-law and her family love The Last Airbender.
All three on Netflix right now.
Oh.
Check them out.
No, now that you've said that you're on our podcast, they're going to disappear by tonight. It's okay. I'll double check. Yes, every time we do the podcast.
Voltron's a Netflix original.
Every time we mention something.
I'll double check everything right now while you're talking, Jared. Go ahead.
Okay. Then Kemp Powers co-directed Soul, which I'm assuming you can probably watch on Disney Plus. I haven't checked, but I'm assuming that's there since it's a Pixar movie. And then Justin K. Thompson is an animator and production designer. And next up, all three of them will co-direct Spider-Man Beyond the Spider-Verse, which is the second part of this movie and the third movie, obviously, in the trilogy. And I think it's good that all three of them are going to be back to direct the third one. I think that will really help with like the storytelling and making sure that it's coherent and it's still the same vision and everything when you have them come back to direct the third. So
absolutely. And I think this was pitched originally as like they always knew this was going to be a part one. So I think these people have wrote this. I think both movies that were written, you know, kind of at the same time. So I think they're already pretty far along in this third movie.
When I looked it up, it said post-production last night.
Really?
It did, which I thought was weird. Year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right. Sorry. I was curious when, because it's interesting that they don't give like a, you know, you would think at the end of this movie, they would have given like a release date.
July
like, next
2024.
One.
Yeah.
So I hope it's not too long, but. You know, these movies require
the next one,
a lot of polish.
The next one is coming out March 29th of 2024. So less than a year away from the third one. So
I wonder if it'll, well, this one got delayed a couple times. So I wouldn't be surprised if this third one, they need a little more time because there's a lot that has to be done.
Also good news. I just checked all three of those are still on Netflix at this moment of the recording.
Cool. Well, we will take a quick break here on the show. We'll come back. We'll talk about the cast and then our likes and dislikes and our thoughts on Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. And we're back here on the Silver Screen Podcast talking about Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. Of course, this movie has a very large cast, Katie, and you've got a lot of people to run through. But we've got to start it off with the man who plays Miles Morales.
Shameik Moore. Thank you so much. I didn't do a crush alert, although I probably should have. So if you could just throw one in, I'll give you a minute. Thank you, Jared. Shameik Moore is beautiful. I will say that. I looked him up, but I don't know how old he is, so I was hesitant. I was like, should I say something? Because I don't know if he's like 20 or if he's like 30. He plays Spider-Man / Miles Morales. Shameik is best known for The Get Down, Dope. Dope I've definitely heard of. Oh, he's 28? That is totally acceptable. That's within my threshold. That's 6 years. Okay.
Yeah.
He's also known for, of course, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. And then next up, he's going to be in the TV movie Bright Futures and Spider-Man Beyond the Spider-Verse, which we think is going to be March of 2024. But we'll see. Then we have Hailee Steinfeld, another very talented person. She plays Spider-Woman / Gwen Stacy. She is best known for The Edge of 17, Bumblebee, True Grit, and Pitch Perfect 3. In 2011, she was nominated for a Best Actress Oscar for True Grit. Excellent remake, if I do say so myself.
Well-deserved,
seriously.
Well-deserved nomination.
Next up, she will be in Spider-Man Beyond the Spider-Verse, and she is rumored to be in Avengers The Kang Dynasty.
Can I give one more credit for her?
Oh, yeah.
That I think is interesting because it's another... This is also on Netflix. I'm just really pushing Netflix on people on this episode. But another voice role she did for an animated project that is incredible looking. It's called Arcane on Netflix. She plays a character named Vi. It's based off of a video game series that I know nothing about. You don't have to know anything about to really enjoy this story. It's really good. That's her on the on the cover there. It's called Arcane. She's just a very talented voice actress. In addition, I love her live action work, but she's really good when it comes to these voice acting roles.
Yes. And some of her songs are bops. So mm-hmm. I'm just telling you.
Yeah.
Like sometimes in the gym, I turn on some Hailee Steinfeld. Okay. Thank you so much for that. And then lastly, we have Oscar Isaac. Dang, probably should have done a crush alert here too. You know what, Jared? Throw one in there. Thank you, Jared. Oscar Isaac plays Spider-Man 2099. He is best known for much more than this, but I just put a few. Ex Machina, A Most Violent Year, Inside Llewellyn Davis, which if you recall, Jared and I saw that the first day we met. Star Wars Episode 8, The Last Jedi. He already has 6 upcoming projects that I am so excited about. So he's going to be in Francis and the Godfather, which is about, I think it's about the making of the Godfather. I know Francis Ford Coppola has something to do with it. Helltown, where he's going to play Kurt Vonnegut, who is a native Hoosier, and in Indiana, we're very proud of him. And he's also rumored to be in Frankenstein. So those are just 3 of the 6 projects, but I picked my favorite 3.
I think it's funny you called out Star Wars Episode 8, The Last Jedi, specifically.
It's because that's what IMDb did. Oh, and okay. I also thought I don't really need to list all the Star... You know what I mean? And I just thought, I'll put that down because people already know.
Yeah. It's also crazy how he is a superhero veteran at this point. And you didn't think it, but he was in X-Men Apocalypse as Apocalypse. That movie, that should have been a career ruining performance.
If you're about
for him.
To ask if I've seen it, absolutely not. I haven't seen it.
He is so bad in it and I love him, but wow, an embarrassing performance from him. Then he's Moon Knight.
Yeah.
And now he's Spider-Man 2099.
I just love him.
Love him.
Also, well, I guess it doesn't matter now because we've already gone deep into this movie. But everyone, Jared got to see Adam Driver in Indianapolis at the Indianapolys 500.
Yeah, we forgot to mention that.
That would have been cool.
So he walked right by me. So
yes, yeah. And on the news, because Jared and I have joked about how our alma mater, UND, that he went there for a while. He went there the semester when I was coming in, and he
went there
left,
for 1 year.
But he never talks about it.
He went there for 1 year and then went to Juilliard. Yeah.
Yes. And he was in the theater department, which I was in. And people talked about him. I remember people talking about him because he was talented. But anyway, he never talks about it. But all the lead up to the 500, when they were like, Adam Driver's coming to town, they talked about how he went to UND. So if he doesn't spread the word, at least Indiana's like really proud of it. And he grew up in Mishawaka, which is up in the northern part. Anyway, just thought that was fun. Then we do have, I have another person to highlight as far as, because I did debate doing this character, but tell me if I mispronounce anything. So under vocal talents, I also wanted to talk about, do you say Karen Sony, do you think is how you say it? I'm asking you, Brandon. Sony's paying you to, no, I'm kidding.
Karan Sony?
Karan, do you think it is Karan? Because I debated. But do you know how to say his name in the movie? I don't.
In the movie, he says it so fast that I can't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you heard Prabhakar?
Yeah. I've only ever seen it. I've seen him in the comics, this character.
Yeah.
So I've only ever read it. So I don't know.
But he was the Indian Spider-Man. And then did they say it's Mumbatan? Is that how you say it?
Yeah, it's like Mumbai and Manhattan.
Manhattan. Yeah. But I wanted to make sure I was saying it right. Yeah. But I'm glad you thought to put him in, Brandon, because I did really like his character and his performance. And then this, just get ready to fall asleep, everyone, because the other vocal talents include, this is just some of them, Issa Rae, Jake Johnson, Daniel Kaluuya, Andy Samberg, Luna Lauren Velez, Jason Schwartzman, Brian Tyree Henry, Amanda Stenberg, Jack Quaid, who's also becoming a veteran in some, he's just been in a lot of comic things lately.
He's a very
comic-esque,
small part.
I know. Rachel Dratch and Mahershala Ali. Rachel Dratch, I wanted to point out, that character made me laugh so much. And the minute before she even started talking, when we saw her face, I was like, that's Rachel Dratch, because they made her look like Debbie Downer from SNL. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so all-star cast. So good.
Our boy Pete Davidson did not get a voice role in this. Kind of surprised. Because he's been in just about every other movie we've reviewed.
Dang it.
He is in the new Transformers, which we are not going to review. But he is in Transformers.
Everyone.
So, but he was just in Fast X. So if you're a big Pete Davidson fan, we did talk about him on the Fast X episode. So
in a
very random and wild cameo that had nothing to do with the plot of the movie. So which is the best kind of cameo, you know, the ones that don't have anything to do with advancing the story. So unlike this movie, which has a lot of good cameos and crucial parts. So so let's talk about our likes first for Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. I think first off, what you kind of have to say about this movie and also the original movie is that these are two of like the most beautifully animated movies that you will ever see on screen. I mean, this one, I think, even does some things different from the first one in terms of using different animation styles, and the different worlds and universes are animated differently depending on where they are, but they just built on what they did in the first one. And the first one was just like a visual explosion. And this one is the same thing. I mean, we just talked about, Katie, last week, The Little Mermaid, and how that appeared kind of dark and muted and didn't really pop on screen. But this movie is the complete opposite. I mean, it is really just visually outstanding, kind of on all fronts.
Agreed. I couldn't agree with you more. I thought that the animation, to me, that's one of the most outstanding things of these films, both of them. I've never seen anything like it. And I think it was Brandon that told me that they've even like developed new techniques and things like they've, we joked over the weekend, we were at the theater and we were talking about, I said, oh, it's like Citizen Kane, because Orson Welles, that was like a big movie where he did things with camera work that people had never done before. So I feel like this is like the new Citizen Kane. Is that weird? Maybe that'll be the soundbite for this one.
This is the new Citizen Kane. Can't take it back. It's out there.
But it's beautiful.
But yeah, I mean, well, there are a few things that I wanted to say about the animation. I mean, the first thing is it's got the largest crew of any animated film ever. Over 1,000 people worked on the animation for this movie. So, I mean, that alone shows the amount of work that was put into this. I mean, what I read the other day, which I thought was really interesting, was the character of Spider-Punk. The techniques that were used to just make him took years. Just on that alone, right? Because they wanted to give that effect of Spider-Punk, that he looks like he's like pasted together. It's supposed to look like, you know, like punk rock magazines and posters where it's kind of like glued or pasted all together. But they animate his jacket at a different frame rate than his body, which is animated at a different frame rate than his head. And, you know, all that stuff has to work in tandem with all the other animation styles that are going on. And yeah, whereas the first movie, being so visually arresting, only having to deal with one, like Miles's world, one individual style, you have Gwen Stacy's like watercolor, amazing, like painterly atmosphere. You have the Mumbatan universe that's like really kind of pops differently. Certain colors are coming
vibrant
in and out. Yeah, right, exactly.
It's like India, what we think of India.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you have like the Spider-Man 2099 Nueva York, which is like very angular, and they do a lot of different stuff with that too. It's just like so many things. It's one of those, it's so cliche to say, but if you like were watching that and you paused it at any moment, it's like a framed work of art, right? Just at any frame. It's really impressive.
Yeah, I think, like you said, you would know immediately, like if you saw a picture from the movie or a frame from the movie, what movie it was. Or you would know it was either the first one or the second one of these, just because of the way they're so animated and they look so much different than anything else that's out there. So I guess generally, too, we could just give general thoughts on the movie. I liked it. I do have a few dislikes with it, mainly in terms of the story is where I found it lacking a little bit, but I'll get into that more in dislikes. But overall, I thought it was a pretty solid movie. I did enjoy it, and I thought it was pretty good. I don't know if I liked it as much as the first one, maybe. I think I did like the first one maybe a little bit more, but I thought this was a nice continuation of the story. So Katie and Brandon, what are your kind of just overall thoughts on this one?
I will say, to be honest, that I don't remember the first one quite as well. Like, I've only watched both of them once, so I can't say, yeah.
But that's okay, because this movie does a really good job at recapping the first one in interesting
ways.
That
was one of my likes, too, right. And I did actually think that, because I watched, like, two recap videos before I went to see this, just to remember, like, in general, who people were when I went in for this film. But I did think this movie did a good job of like calling back to, like, I forgot things that happened to Peter Parker at the beginning that we see. I remembered Gwen Stacy, but I thought they did a really good job of providing like the background context. And then one other thing I wanted to say about animation was just, I'm really impressed and glad that the animation was so good in this film, because we always hear about Pixar, and Pixar is outstanding. They deserve all the accolades. But at the same time, it's neat to see other people really like joining that race, I guess. Mm-hmm. Well, so I'm impressed.
It's crazy to see new now too. Pixar's at a point where people are kind of finding, you know, the response to Elemental that's coming out soon has been kind of mm-hmm. like tepid, right? Like people yeah. are like, mm-hmm. it looks like a Pixar movie.
Yep.
Whereas you've seen since 2018, you've seen how all these movies are starting to come out. I'm sure you saw the trailer for that new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie in front of this, and how much inspiration is being taken from something like Spider-Verse mm-hmm. and how it's like, mm-hmm. well, let's utilize animation in more interesting ways. It doesn't yeah. need to look Disney. It can look, you know, more sketchy and more like, you know, it's pulled from a page
like
of a comic
painting,
book.
I guess.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah. And then you even look at like, Pinocchio last year that Guillermo del Toro did, and that's obviously sort of a different type of animation because it's stop motion, but still some animation in that movie too, and obviously that won best animated film at the Oscars, so that's even a separate type of animation. So there, you're right, Brandon, there has been a lot of, I think, development in that area even over the past couple of years, with people trying some new and different things. So cool. Well, we will we'll get into more of our kind of more specific likes now. Excuse me. So, Brandon, I know you did really like this movie, though, and I know you had a hard time kind of coming up with different areas for likes and dislikes, but I know you're a big Spider-Man fan, but you really did enjoy this one. Where would you put this one maybe in terms of the other Spider-Man movies that we've gotten? Obviously, this is a right. little different because it's animated versus live action, but mm-hmm. how much did you enjoy this one?
Well, this is a great plug for my Letterboxd profile. I got a Spider-Verse list on there. You can go ahead and check that out. I got them all ranked.
You do?
From oh yeah. I got a bunch of lists. Got to check out my list.
I read books.
okay, all right. But no, I think it's hard because like the Spider-Man movies are definitely broken up by like different eras, right? So
yeah.
In the early 2000s, we had, of course, the Sam Raimi movies. And I still think Spider-Man 2 by Sam Raimi is like maybe the greatest comic book movie of all time. I think it can't be topped.
Tobey Maguire, is that?
Yes. Tobey Maguire that has Dr. Octopus in it.
Doc Ock.
Yeah. I think like the storytelling in that, the like characterization, it's everything I love about Spider-Man. And the action, just the creative action in that. I mean, everyone talks about that like subway sequence from Spider-Man 2.
So good.
When's the
upside down kiss?
That's the first one.
Oh my mm-hmm. God. Yeah. That like changed yep. my yeah. life.
So I think those rank, that ranks higher just because it was, we hadn't gotten a take on Spider-Man. Whereas what we're getting with the Spider-Verse movies are, they're pulling from a lot of our knowledge of Spider-Man up to this point, right? Like we're taking a lot of the mythos of, that's my list right there. They're taking a lot of the mythos that we know of Spider-Man already and kind of blowing it up in this movie, right? I don't know if we've mentioned this yet in regards to like spoilers. Are we good to like give?
I'm so sorry. Oh, yeah, should've done yep. at the top, yeah. everyone. Spoiler alert. We're going to just spoil the heck out of this. So if you, we always say this, please come back though. So if you want to like pause it, do it now, but please come yep. back and listen to the rest of the episode yep. and share with your friends.
Yes. But I think like the reason I like this one so much is I think it's starting to do really interesting things with what audiences kind of generally know about Spider-Man and how it's kind of changing our perception of, you know, what makes Spider-Man great. You know, the first movie, kind of the whole thesis statement of that movie is anyone can wear the mask, right? Not just Peter Parker. Mm-hmm. Miles has that whole speech at the end, you know, I wear the mask, you can wear the mask.
Gwen.
Yeah, exactly. Gwen, who mm-hmm. In this movie, Miles has that thing where they're sitting, one of my favorite scenes in the movie, they're sitting upside down mm-hmm. on the building, which Cliff is such thing. A neat yeah. idea. And he tells her like, we're the same, right? In the ways that are important. And like everyone else in the Spider-Verse, they're all like versions of Peter Parker, right? But, you know, there's, or like little variations on that. Whereas Gwen and Miles have something different about them. They don't necessarily fit within the same mold. They are fighting against the canon events that, you know, are a big crux of the plot of this film. And I think it's like a really cool idea to like kind of question what the Spider-Man character is, and like, can it be something else? Does it have to be full of tragedy? Can it be, you know, can we avoid that? So that movie is exploring a lot of those mm-hmm. themes.
I had something that related yes. to something he touched on. I really did like that a lot of this movie at the top began like with Gwen Stacy and her character, because I didn't see that coming. And, you know, perhaps you've noticed on a lot of episodes, I talk about how we don't focus on women's stories and they make no money and there's not a lot of women superheroes, and some that we have, they suck too. It was neat that Gwen Stacy, like, she basically opens the film, and it's even called Spider-Man, and like a lot of the story revolved around her. And I thought that was really cool. And I also thought, this is a definite spoiler, but I thought it was interesting how both of them chose to reveal their identity to certain people. Now, sometimes it was different universes and stuff, but I thought that was interesting, because just imagine the relief you would feel like you're carrying this secret around. And also like Gwen, her dad thinks she's like a killer and a villain. And then to be able to kind of like, just, even if it's just to one trusted person, say like, this is the truth and I mm-hmm. am this, what a nice, that was, I just thought that was a nice touch.
Yeah. I mean, she's been upgraded to pretty much co-lead in this one. And it's nice to see her also, her character doesn't hinge on Miles, right? She gets her own arc. She gets her own like realization of like, yes, you know, the movie ends up being like with what we're setting up in the next one there, she's like going to like try to save Miles. And, you know, it's very connected to his story, but she gets that closure with her dad. And that's like, as much as this movie is a cliffhanger, I think it does a really good job at kind of closing the loop on her specific story, leaves her in a really interesting place for the next one.
One thing I like about these movies too is that they're pretty grounded for like superhero movies. They feel very real in terms of the conversations, like you were talking about, Brandon, the conversations characters have with each other. It doesn't, you know, now obviously it's set in this really like cool universe and it's very you know, cool animation and everything, but I feel like from a storytelling perspective, it feels very real and grounded with the family dynamics and with some other dynamics that happen. I mean, even during that canon events sequence of the movie, when you know, they're explaining to Miles, hey, this is what happened with every other Spider-Man, you know, in every other universe, is these things happen and somebody close to you is going to have to die because that's just what happens when you're Spider-Man, you know, that gives him a really interesting moral dilemma to have to try and deal with and try to figure out what he wants to do. And obviously that's going to, looks like it's going to be resolved in the next movie. But I really like some of the storytelling things of the movie, in terms that some of these superhero movies just feel very big and like they could never happen in real life and they're just really out there. But this one feels like, you know, it is like relationships between characters that just live in these cities and universes.
Yeah. I mean, those were like some of my favorite scenes in the whole movie were just these like quiet moments that happen between these characters. And I think in addition to a lot of the stuff that's going on with Miles in particular, that's Spider-Man related, I also think there's a lot of interesting themes around like parenting and parents mm-hmm. and like our relationships with parents and like how they have to adjust to changes. Like there's the whole, you know, with Gwen having that really bad experience with her father, and then Miles having like this healthier relationship with his parents, but still not being able to like express to them how he's feeling and mm-hmm. how he's changing, you know, a lot of relatable themes there. And then on the flip side, we have, cause we haven't really talked about Oscar Isaac's Miguel O'Hara much yet. But him being on the flip side of a parent that lost everything, lost his family. Mm-hmm. And as a result, he has, you know, wants to like get like not lose grip on control at all, and it's causing him to like move into this extremism that we see from his character. So really interesting takes on like how parenting can affect family elements and you know, how people need to evolve and grow.
That was very clever, because I didn't even think about that. I did notice another thing I liked was Miles's parents, especially. I liked their dynamic with him. And in a lot of movies, animated or not, we see a lot of parents being very removed from the story or not knowing what's going on in their children's lives. And it's really refreshing to see parents that are like concerned about his well-being. Where are you going? What are you going to do about college? questions like that. And they were just adorable together. I felt like that was a very believable love story between the two of them, and how they have some cringe worthy moments with their son. Cause he's like, ew, they like kiss and they love each other, which I thought was adorable. And I also liked that. I think that added that both these films, I always notice if a movie is something that like I could watch with my parents and be very comfortable watching it with them. Mm-hmm. And both of these are terrific examples of that, because you've still got action. There's still plot, there's still villains, there's still stuff like that. But it's something you can watch with anyone. This would appeal to everyone. And I do think that's why another reason why it makes so much money is everyone can watch this. Mm-hmm.
And Rio, Rio Morales, the mom, mm-hmm. The first movie is very dad focused, a very, very heavy yeah. just between him and his dad. And it was really nice. And uncle, but it was yeah. really nice to have her kind of emerge as like, you know, more, even more of a primary parental figure for mm-hmm. Miles in this one.
Yeah.
So another like for this one, that I know you had, Katie, is, the music as well. And the soundtrack.
Oh my
now
gosh.
The music's a little different in this one. From the first one is more songs by artists, especially hip hop and rap songs. This one is more of a traditional movie score, mm-hmm. instead of like individual songs, but this, score is really good again for this particular movie.
Yeah, I noticed it. And I think I didn't even look up the artist. I know that I've seen some of it on Instagram and stuff. Go ahead.
Daniel Pemberton.
No, not the, I mean like the, like some of it was hip hop and stuff.
Oh, Metro Boomin kind of curated the,
yes.
the soundtrack.
There yeah. was, cause there was somebody, there's an original song and it had like four artists or something and they're modern. Mm. They're like people that were mm-hmm. like, mm-hmm. Anyway, the music was just really, really good. And I think it aids the story. And I think that Daniel Pemberton
yep.
just did a good job of picking what music to put where. And I think that that helps. And to me, it's an artistic element that works really well with a very artistic movie.
Yeah.
His
score.
Oh, go ahead, Brandon. Sorry.
No, I was just going to reiterate his score is so good. I mean, his score was great in the first one. And in this one, he really gets to play with like changing up the score whenever they go to the different worlds. Like Mumbatan has a very different vibe to 2099's Nueva York and all this stuff.
So another like too was like you said, Brandon, and like you had on the list, Katie, is the background info is helpful in this film, just in case maybe you haven't seen the first one or maybe you kind of forget, because there's a lot of stuff happening in these movies. You're going to multiple universes, lots of different characters, so maybe you kind of forgot a little bit what happened in the first movie. They do a nice job of kind of giving you that information as this movie goes on, so that you understand the events of the first one and how those are going to impact this movie. And if you need a little refresher, they just kind of give that to you during the film.
And I think the last thing, I definitely want to hear more of your thoughts, Brandon, but the last thing that I liked, hold on a second, sorry, was just that, I keep forgetting what I'm saying. Oh yes. I do think out of the Spider-Man movies, I think this movie in particular, even while I was watching it, I thought there was a lot that's going to remain relevant. It's not a movie where 50 years from now, someone's going to watch and be like, I don't understand. Or why were comics exciting, or who's Spider-Man? Because I also think a lot of it helped that Miles is biracial. I think it helped that there's a wide range of people, places, ethnicities, just different cultural elements that a lot of people can relate to that are kind of worldwide. And I think a lot of the storylines we've talked about, parenthood, dating, kind of not understanding where relationships lie with other people, losing family members, losing loved ones, all of that is that's all like part of the human experience. So I think that this movie is going to be one that people can relate to for a long time. It's going to be very classic.
It's a movie
that
has
definitely agree.
Yeah. It's a movie that has a clear vision, which is a lot of MCU movies. You don't see that. A lot of MCU movies are stepping stones to get to the next big event, to get to the next big thing. They don't have their own sense of purpose, and they're not trying to say anything in particular. These movies are striving to tell you something about yourself and about the world. And I think that elevates it to a different level.
So one of my final likes was I really thought that the villain character of Spot was really cool. Just like how he could basically just go through an ink hole and then show up somewhere else. But he was also a little clumsy at the same time. I just thought he was like a very well-developed villain. And obviously he's more early in the movie than later. But right. I thought it was really cool. And I thought Jason Schwartzman, who voiced him, did a good job of kind of giving that character some personality as well. I just thought he was a really cool villain.
Agreed. I thought Jason Schwartzman was was such a good voice for that. And then also that was one of the characters where I was just stunned by the animation, how good the animation was. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they did it. So good.
You had information. I was just going to say a quick thing. You could like see the pencil drawings, right? Yeah. Of him. Like he wasn't fully finished.
Yeah. Which is cool.
Yeah. Really, really neat. Yeah. And I think the big thing about him that I thought was so neat is how he's so funny in that opening scene, and what an incredible action sequence with him and Miles going through Brooklyn, you know, in all these different holes and stuff. But then he's incredibly terrifying, like midway through when he's gaining all his power and he tells like Miles, like, I'm going to take everything from you. And he's becomes super menacing. It's really cool to see Jason Schwartzman tackle both sides of that. And then by the end of the movie, you're like, oh my God, is he going to like end the world? Yeah. I don't know what's going to happen. So I thought that was a really well executed villain.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Brandon, do you have any other likes? And then I think before we get to dislikes, we should probably talk about the ending, because a lot of people have been talking about the ending of this particular movie. So we'll touch on that before we get to dislikes. But do you have any other likes for this movie?
Nothing too big. I think that we haven't already discussed. I think it's just, you know, I see a movie like this and I think like, oh, I just like when movies remind me that the whole industry is like art and like film is art. And like, this is just a movie that brings that out in me on like a very general level of like, oh yeah, that's right. This is like so many hardworking people work on this. And it's amazing that we get movies at all. And that's like a thing that we can go do. And there's multiple ones out every weekend. It's a movie like this that really draws out those feelings for me. So I think on like a general level, that's just like a huge like. It's a movie that makes me love movies.
Yes.
And I just really like that.
I relate to that, believe it or not, because I did really like this movie. To me, it's not going to be a movie I want to watch all the time just because of like what it, comics and stuff just don't do that for me in the same way. But I completely relate to you. When I see a movie that's about like journalism or something like that, or a really good drama about a true story, something that's happened, those are the kind of things where I'm just like, wow, like it's incredible that these things get made. It reminds me how hard it is to make a movie, and it makes me very happy to be a performer of any kind in any medium. So I hear you on that.
So let's talk about the ending just a little bit, because I don't know, my theater was kind of in shock when the movie ended. I don't know if they didn't know it was going to be two parts, this was just part one, but there was a lot of gasps and oh man, it's like, I wish it would have continued, but I kind of like where they went with the ending, with the fact that Miles is in a different universe. He's not in the universe where his parents are. This is a different universe. They don't know who he is. His dad has already died in this universe. His uncle is still alive in this universe. I think it sets up some really interesting things for the next movie, which seems like it's going to be pretty dark in terms of its themes and storytelling, at least from what we got in the last 15-20 minutes of this one. So I think it will be interesting how they continue the story, but I know for a lot of people, they didn't know that this was just part one of a two-part story, and I think they were expecting maybe a wrap-up at the end of the movie and then didn't get it, you know, with this being the kind of the first one of a two-part thing.
You were describing me. I was one of those people. I will say I really only have one dislike about the film, and it was the end. Brandon's calling that one of the weaker elements. I'm putting that in air quotes, everyone, of this film. And because I was one of the people that, because I don't read all the stuff about these movies, and I care, but I don't care, you know, like it's not life changing for me. I went in with an open mind and everything. But by the end, I was like, wait, what? I just thought, dang, it felt like a long con to me, where I was just like, these guys are committed. Like, I fell for this hook, line, and sinker, because I thought this was just going to be one complete story. So part of it was me being disappointed, like, oh no, I want to know what happens. And part of me was like, I rolled a little bit, because I thought, of course there's going to be another one. Why wouldn't there? Let's make 10 more. Why stop at three?
But I don't think, what I will say what's different about a movie like this is I don't think they are doing that to like set up a 10 movie franchise. I think they're like, we have a story that is going to take two movies to tell. And it's interesting because when this, Well, I mean, this story, the first movie is kind of a complete thing, right?
Yeah.
And this one's spanning across two. But it's interesting because when this movie was first announced, it was announced as Across the Spider-Verse Part 1. That was in the title.
Oh, right.
And then they dropped that and they renamed the third movie Beyond the Spider-Verse instead. Now, was that a mistake? I don't know, because now we're getting people that are going to the audience and being like, what? Because they aren't prepared for that. I think it's incredibly exciting in the way that it's like something like Empire Strikes Back, or dare I invoke Dune, doesn't tell a complete story, but is setting some things up for an exciting second movie. I think it does a really good job at leaving you in a place where you still got your bang for your buck in the 2.5 hours you were in the seat. But then, you have this setup for something incredibly different for a third movie, right? Miles is literally going to be facing himself. What does that mean? What are the themes we're going to get from that, right? A version of him that didn't get to be Spider-Man, that didn't have the influence of his parents, going back to parenting, being a big, factor of this movie. Like, I'm very curious where they're going to go with it. And yeah, I think it's a weaker element because it's not a complete story, right? So if this third movie doesn't stick the landing, will it make this movie worse? That's the big thing, right? Or if the third movie ends up being a total home run, does this just make this like a perfect 5-hour film, 5-hour story?
It's probably going to be great. But I would like to point out about Dune. Dune is a great piece of literature, and it's over 600 pages, whereas a movie script is like 100, 150 max usually.
If they wrote this...
I'm just saying.
If they wrote this, but they wrote both of these at the same time.
But
right?
Dune is... it's a masterpiece. It's fine.
It is different. It's not based off of an existing property. But
raise your hand if you've read Dune in this group. Because it's just one person.
No.
It's me.
So, I think
whoever's listening, it's me.
I think my main dislike with it, and why I'm a little bit lower on it than I think maybe you two are, is that I think it was the story for me. I just thought this one didn't have a lot of story in it. It felt very more of a setup for the next movie, and it was a little thin in parts in terms of like story advancement. I just thought it didn't have as much as the first one. I will say I did really like, once we got to the last 45 minutes or so, when they're talking about the canon events and when like he's going against all the other Spider-Man from all the other universes, and then getting to the end of the movie, I did enjoy that part of it, but I thought leading up to that was a little slow at times. So that was kind of my main dislike. And then I also have another dislike that I don't think is movie related, but is more theater related. This was very quiet in the theater that I saw it in. And that has been a common thing that has happened with this movie. I researched it a little bit, but they mixed it a certain way and theaters are not turning it up loud enough to compensate for the way they mixed the movie. And so that happened in the theater that I was in. It was just very quiet. It didn't kind of pop like it normally would in a theater. So I would maybe like to go see this again with some, or watch it at home with some, where I can turn it up louder. But it was a little difficult to hear the dialogue at some points, and then it was just very kind of quiet overall. So I don't know if you guys had that problem in your showing or not.
No.
So, okay.
It was especially in the beginning, in that intro sequence where she's banging on the drums and has that monologue. She was very quiet, but yeah, I read that too, that their mix is so dynamic that theaters are just so used to having movies at like whatever standard that they're not adjusting it correctly
That's
to meet
bad.
The movie. Yeah.
Wow. Be better.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. I mean, you think, because I worked at a movie theater and I was up in the projection booth for a time. Normally the first showing that you do, you try to sneak down to the theater while it's on and just kind of make sure that everything looks right and sounds right. So like the Thursday night opening night, you kind of try to go down there and make sure everything's good to go. So obviously some theaters haven't been doing that. And then, some theaters obviously will just keep their volume at a certain level and never really adjust it. But I think for this one, it needed to be just turned up a little bit. I will say, like, at one point I had to go to the bathroom and our seats were in the back of the theater. And I walked down towards the front of the theater, obviously. And it was a little louder down there in terms of the dialogue and stuff. So it could have been also based on where I was sitting. I was more towards the back. But I think in general, it needed to just be a little bit louder in the theater I was in. So
did you use Run-P? To go to the bathroom?
Yes, I did. So
I'm so proud of you. But, we got to keep plugging that. I've never used it. I don't leave the theater.
Sometimes it
has. But I love that
bad,
Jared does.
I will say, though, sometimes it has bad suggestions. Sometimes it suggests times to go, and then I'll look at it afterwards and be like, no, that was one of the more exciting parts of the movie. So I don't agree with that 100% on some of the suggestions it has. But yeah, if you need to use a restroom during a movie, it's a good app to have. So do we have any other dislikes? I think the one thing you mentioned, Brandon, I see in the notes is that this is a very complex story, and the first one was a complex story too, and this one's, you know, complex as well. And for some people, that could be hard to kind of understand where everything's going. I mean, there's even times during the movie where they like pop up a little text box on the bottom of the screen to kind of maybe give you a little context on what that means that that character just said. Right. But this one is kind of doing some more things even than the first one, I would say, in terms of story and the multiple universes and things.
Yeah, it's very dense. I mean, especially once you get to like Spider Society, right? That's where I think the one that I think is the hardest to really like, usually I found the movie to be like incorporating exposition in interesting ways. And then at one point, like Miguel O'Hara talks to his little Lila assistant. He's like, you know, do the explainy thingy or whatever. It's just like, here's a scene where we're explaining what's going on, right? Which is the whole like canon events thing and the web of destiny and whatnot that he goes into. I think that's the biggest like info dump that we get all at once. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's asking a lot of you. But I think for the most part, it succeeds in doling out information a little bit at a time to make sure you're like not getting lost anywhere. But there are a few moments where you're just like, okay, I have to like take a minute and think like, okay, this is an anomaly and Miles is not okay. And like canon events are like these different moments are all right. I think mm-hmm. I'm like following, but if you're not like deep into the lore of Spider-Man, it can be a lot to take in.
I do agree with that. Okay. Sorry. I think that would be my second dislike because I did have a lot of questions at the end, and a lot of it was just because I'm not as deep in it and Sony isn't paying me to advertise for their movie like they're paying Brandon. But I did have a lot of questions. I even like for a little bit, I didn't even notice that Miles was like in another universe. Like it just took me a while to catch up on things. And I left with a lot of questions. I don't really think that's their fault. I just think this is a problem that I encounter with a lot of comic book movies because some people are deeply obsessed, like I am with Sex and the City, and they know everything about it. But if you're not reading all of that stuff or seeing all the accompanying films or reading the comics and stuff, you do miss some of those pieces.
It also doesn't help that literally everyone is doing the multiverse thing right now. And like, it's not fair to Spider-Verse because they're doing it very well. And then there's other movies that are not, you know, like the MCU is kind of like struggling to make that happen, you know, with Ant-Man and the Wasp and stuff. And like a bunch of other things that are, you know, obviously Everything Everywhere All at Once being like, you know, big kind of high standard mm-hmm. for multiverse. Yeah. But yeah, it's the hot concept right now. The Flash is like, we're doing multiverse with the Flash coming up here soon. Everyone's got their multiverse.
I'm not.
There's other Katies out there doing other podcasts with other Jareds. Yep. Some of them are about culture.
I'm not going to be seeing The Flash, but I get what you're saying.
I think my only thing I was going to say on that point, Brandon, was that I think with the third movie, it might even get a little more difficult because you're going to have two Miles Moraleses, you know, that are going to be, and maybe more possibly depending on what they do with the multiverse in that movie. So that could really make it even more confusing for viewers in terms of that. It's not just going to be multiple Spider-Mans. It might be multiple Miles with different storylines going on in different universes kind of at the same time. It seems like that might be where they're kind of taking the next one a little bit. So
yeah, I'll be very curious. It's mm-hmm. definitely a tricky thing, right? Because whenever you do something like this where it's not telling a complete story, you know, all your eggs are in one basket. They have to nail it or else it kind of lessens what everyone loves about this one. Like, so hopefully they do. I have, based on the first two movies, I have full confidence they will, but we'll see.
Cool. Are we ready to move on to our grades, our scores for this movie?
Yeah. I don't even think we need to ask Brandon his, but you can go first this time, Jared.
Okay. I think I'm the lowest of the three of us on this particular one. I didn't love it as much as the first one. I thought it dragged in some parts. The animation was obviously very beautiful to look at, and I did like some of the villain stuff, like I said earlier. But I think the story was maybe a little lacking in this one. So I'm going to go a 73 out of 100. I enjoyed it, but I'm not going to give it in the 90s for this film. I am really interested, though, to see, like we've talked about with the next one, will that bump up my score for this movie? Will it lower my score for this movie? It really depends a lot on the next film. And I think this one is good, but I don't know if I can fully judge it either without seeing the next one and seeing how they kind of connect, since this is going to be such a two-part story. But I looked at this one and the first one, and I still like the first one better than this one. So a little lower on this one, a 73.
I'm going to go ahead. I mean, I respect that. I hear you, Jared. I was worried like Brandon was going to have a heart attack.
No, I'm doing great. I get it.
Sony's going to pay him either way, so yeah, it's fine. Yeah. I'm going to give this a 92. I thought this movie was pretty incredible. It's not, again, it's just so different than types of movies I love to see. But the fact that I really had to think about things to dislike and couldn't remember things I disliked says a lot to me. I love how approachable it is. I love how timeless it is. The artwork is unmatched. Like just all of the animation. I don't even know a recent film. Maybe Soul. Soul really impressed me with the animation. I don't know why. But a lot of recent movies, I'm not that impressed by the animation or anything. Mm-hmm. I love the music. I love the characters. I love how different they are. And I like the direction these stories are going.
Cool.
Okay, Brandon, I guess it's your turn.
Well, I feel like now 92 is high for you. I did not expect 92.
Thank you.
So I guess I got to go the highest score.
I mean,
right?
I thought you were going to do over 100, which isn't allowed.
No. And you guys go, you guys are very, like, you go like 73s and 92s and stuff. I'm more of a, you know, mm-hmm. I do like by like fives in my rankings. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, it's like, you know, every 5 points. So I was considering going with just a flat 90, but I think I'll bump it up.
And should I go lower?
No. I think I'm going to go 95 for this, okay, with you know, the right to go higher or lower depending on the third film. But yeah, I just think it's kind of breathtaking.
The good news about this podcast is you can change your rankings all the time, you know, because this is kind of like Whose Line, where everything's made up and the points don't matter.
Yeah.
It's just like for fun.
Is this the highest ranking you've given a movie in 2023? Because if so, it's your favorite movie of 2023. It's your favorite movie of 2023.
I think I marked it as my third, out of new movies this year, I think it's the third one.
Because okay.
I liked Air slightly more, and I did have A Man Called Otto, which didn't come out this year, right? So I guess this would be.
No, it did.
My
it came out in January.
Oh, it did. Okay, yeah. So this is my third.
Yeah, it came out.
That's A Man Called Otto.
I don't know I don't know that Otto is. I don't know, but Otto is definitely in my top three. Right. So right now it's Air, Otto, and this.
It's Matt Damon, cranky Tom Hanks, and then Miles Morales.
I mean,
right?
Two of my love bugs, which would be Tom Hanks and Matt Damon, are like in the running here. But Shameik Moore, I mean, yum. But
my top three from this year are Guardians, John Wick, and then Air. So right now. So I know that disagrees with you, Katie, but
that's okay, Jared. But that's why we're best friends. We can agree to disagree and still work.
I think my
together.
Top three right now are Across the Spider-Verse. I really liked Guardians. I thought Guardians was just like the best thing MCU has done in years. And then Air. Air is my third.
I was going to say, this isn't a dislike, but one thing I don't love about these three Spider-Man movies, I can't remember the titles to save my life.
Into, Across, Beyond.
I just keep saying Spider-Man, like, oh, the new Spider-Man movie.
That's fine.
Or Spidey.
People know what you're talking about.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, that's bad when you can't even name the movie. So
okay. That's okay. So
anyway,
there's our
Brandon, thank you for being on the podcast.
Yeah. Thanks, Brandon,
thanks
for coming
me.
On and talking about Spider-Man. So
yay, anytime. Anytime.
I'll have you on when the new one comes out. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. You can come back in March probably of 2024. Okay. If it comes out then, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. We'll
you see. Would be welcome anytime.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you
and
so much.
And since Sony's
for having
paying
me.
You you should know the updates probably. So yeah, if it gets delayed, just let us know. So
I will inform you all.
And share the money.
No.
Okay.
So So that's our thoughts on Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. You can follow us on social media at Podcast Silver on Twitter and Instagram. Search the Silver Screen Podcast on Facebook. And then you can find Katie and I on Letterboxd. Our profiles are in the description for the show notes. Brandon, what's your Letterboxd? And if you send it to me, I'll link it in there too so that people can follow you on there too.
Sure, absolutely. My Letterboxd is at B-E-E-Shock.
B-Shock.
Nice. Yep. B-Shock on Letterboxd. So go check out Brandon's Letterboxd. Check out our Letterboxd as well. You can follow us on social media. We've got lots coming up. Our next episode, we are going to be reviewing Still, a Michael J. Fox movie, the new documentary on Apple TV Plus about Michael J. Fox. So very interested to talk about this. We talked before the episode. Katie's not super interested in seeing Transformers Rise of the Beast, even though Brandon and I would go see it. We got overruled on that one. We're going to do the Michael J. Fox documentary.
This isn't the Jared and Brandon podcast.
No, it's not. It's a Silver Screen podcast.
Will Optimus Prime defeat Unicron? Don't you want to know?
I don't care. I hope they both die.
Oh, wow. Okay, just nix the whole franchise. Just be done with it.
Sorry, everyone.
So we'll talk about Michael J. Fox next week on the show, though. Should be good and interesting, and we haven't done a documentary in a while, so that should be fun to discuss.
Until next time, we'd like to thank the Academy.